And we're back at it again on Flippers Always Win. Thank you for tuning in. My name is Flip. I host this podcast. We went to a bar in DC, and by we, I mean myself, Julia, Avery, the guest from last week, and our guest this week, Ashwin. So we go to a bar to watch Survivor last night. I had never done anything like that. I'd never been to any sort of watch party. It was really cool. It wasn't like a huge space. It was on a patio on a roof. And the TV itself, it wasn't huge, but the speakers were great. There were captions on. Everybody was pretty quiet while the show was rolling. And to top it all off, we ended up having ourselves a great episode, especially post-competition. Whatever happened on that Lavo beach, we want more of it. Everything inverted onto itself. We had Jesse on the show week one, our inaugural episode, say whenever Keyshawn gets voted out, it's going to be a massive blindside. He also said that Genevieve is somebody to watch out for. So 2 points for Jesse, because this was not something that I think anybody really saw coming. I think pretty universally this was seen as not just a blindside on Keyshawn, but a blindside to the viewers. The girl with the purplest edit comes out of nowhere, and we have to talk about the amazing edit job of Genevieve laying there and the Keyshawn montage. What about Genevieve? Oh man, chef's kiss. Whoever came up with that one, the paint idol on Tuku, the twists over the past seven seasons, whatever, since the new era started, they've been hit or miss. More often missed, I dare to say. But right now, I've said it before, I'll say it again, it's hitting its rhythm. It's hitting its stride. On some level, yes, we've adapted to it. But things are optimizing on the Survivor production team in terms of twists and fun new edits. Rome, we've talked about him a lot. He's a villain, but can't deny the entertainment value at this point. Avery said it last week, he's playing it like a game. And there's nothing wrong with that in itself. Finally, he got a little humbled, more than a little humbled with that competition and realizing that he could be next to go if he did not apologize to Saul, which he did. You got to give him credit. He did apologize, albeit only because he had to. Don't want to give him too much credit. Genevieve, it was a point made in an article that I read earlier today. The ability to bring two strong-minded people together who hate each other in order to get what she wants, to take out the mastermind to that point of the tribe, that's not slight work. That's digging down and doing things that very few Survivor castaways have ever been able to do. She really did come out of absolutely nowhere to do it. I'm excited to see what happens with her game. I think the Lava tribe is pretty fractured, so if and when they go to tribal again before the merge, that should be interesting. One thing about Flip loves a soda mix. I go to convenience stores. I go to fast food restaurants. I go to movies, any type of place that has a soda machine with multiple flavors. And what I like to do as a soda fiend is mix as many together as possible. And I've been doing this more than half my life. When you do it as a kid, it's kind of cute. When you do it as an adult, you have to look both ways and kind of hope that nobody's looking because you look like an absolutely ridiculous stain on society. But I keep doing it. And last week I realized, you know, I've been doing this soda mix thing for over half my life. Why don't I start rating them? And so the next question, of course, begs, well, what are the criteria for rating soda mixes? And I came up with four. And those criterion are taste, fizz, tang, cohesion. These are all on a 1 to 10 scale. You add them all up, you divide by four, and that's the overall final rating. Taste, fizz, tang, cohesion. And so I thought to myself, let's rate a tribe on the soda mix criterion. We're not changing any of them. Taste, fizz, tang, cohesion. Let's do gata. Taste. I would describe their taste as somewhat acerbic, but in a delightful way. Kind of like a Dr. Pepper that isn't super sweet, but still tastes good. Shout out to all the Dr. Pepper fans out there. I know Julia is not one of them. She likes a DDP, a Diet Dr. Pepper. I like regular Dr. Pepper as well as Diet Dr. Pepper. Yeah, like a not super sweet Dr. Pepper. If it was any less sweet, it wouldn't be good. It's in that middle ground. They vary. Dr. Pepper might have one of the biggest variances of all the sodas from place to place. But I digress. So their taste is like a not super sweet Dr. Pepper. So I'm going to give that like a 6.6. Fizz. The way I interpret fizz in the survivor sense is the reverberation. Do they have that powerful feeling? Somebody like Tevin from Survivor 46, very strong on fizz. Very strong fizz with Tevin. The carbonation high on Tevin. Gata, don't feel that there's a ton of fizz. And fizz is super important. I'm going to say a 4.4. Not a lot of oomph there. But one thing they do have is tang. This is a tangy group here. This is a somewhat flat orange soda group. And I love orange soda. And I'll drink it even if it's not the fizziest. And that's how I feel about Gata right now, is I'm lapping it up even if we're not getting electrified, so to speak. But it's just that sweet, soury little tang that keeps you going and wanting more, coming back for more. So on tang, I'm giving them an 8.2. So we got a 6.6 on taste, a 4.4 on fizz, an 8.2 on tang. And the final is cohesion. You know, in this new era of Survivor, I think you see cohesion on a pre-merge tribe less and less, because you have to go at each other's throats with less numbers so much more quickly than in an older season where there's like 9 people on a tribe, 8 people on a tribe, and it's a slower process of getting to that core, and you can easily pick off the extra fat, so to speak. But here you're going right at it. And so cohesion is tougher to have. You've seen the Annika and Sam tiff. You've seen Andy make a fool of himself. But overall, you know, you see this last clip on the episode where Sam's white boy rapping insufferably. I would know because I've done it too, and I won't be doing it again, especially after seeing that. That's a lesson learned. But you see them all hanging out, having fun. So I think the cohesion, despite everything, is actually pretty high. And it helps that Sierra is the glue. To have a cohesive tribe, you need to have glue. And even if the glue is wearing from Sierra to Sam, from Sierra to Andy, she still is holding the whole thing together. They're all getting along well enough for this to be described as, I think, a fairly cohesive bunch, especially for a new era pre-merge tribe. I'm giving them a 7.4. You know, they've only had to go to tribal once, and they were in agreeance. So it's not a group that's tearing each other down just yet. Now let's see them go to tribal, lose another challenge. We might see some cracks. That cohesion likely falls apart, but that's for anyone. So we've got a 6.6 on taste, a 4.4 on fizz, an 8.2 on tang, a 7.4 on cohesion. Let's do some math. Our final score on a scale of 1 to 10 for the soda mix criterion for Gata is a 6.65. That's pretty solid. Is it my favorite soda? No, but it's got good elements. If we could just get some carbonation in there. I'm trying to think of what a 6.6 soda is in real life to me. You know what it is? It's that Mountain Dew Soda Stream mix. And I know that it's got a lot of fizz, and that's not really exactly comparable, considering I said this tribe is lacking fizz. But I would rate the Mountain Dew Soda Stream mix that you make at home right around a 6.6. And it's the same color as Gata. It's bright yellow. The color of bile. So there you have it. Gata is your at-home Mountain Dew Soda Stream mix. Probably the best one. I've tried a few of them. A lot of them just straight up really aren't that good. But this one slaps. You got tangy Andy. You got cohesive sugar Sierra. Just not a lot of bubbles. Not a lot of bubbles. If you're listening right now and you feel as though Gata should have a lower or higher rating, if you feel as though there's a particular soda that matches their brand, please hit me up in the DMs. Hit me up over the text. Don't email. You can. I'm not. I guess I wouldn't say don't. Do whatever you want to do. I'm open to any sort of communication, but I'd love to know. And maybe I'll share it next week, what you thought. And maybe we'll do this again next week if people like it, with Tuku or Lavo, if Lavo even still exists by that point. If they go to tribal one more time, I don't know if you can really do a accurate soda rating for three people. You got to have at least four. I think you got to have four to do a concrete soda rating. And those are the rules. We're making them up as we go, and we're sticking to them until we want to change them. And that's that. We have a great show coming up. Ashwin is here. He's an extremely new Survivor fan, but he's come a long way in a short amount of time. Won't want to miss it. Going to be a fun conversation. We'll be right back. Hi, I'm Flip, the host of Flippers Always Win. We have no sponsorships on this podcast, so in place of an ad, I would like to read to you a review of a resort that my friends recently stayed at on their honeymoon. I'm not going to tell you where in the world this was because they had a great time and it's a wonderful place, but this particular hotel was not up to par in terms of cleanliness and some other things that you like to look for in a hotel. So this review was not written by them. It was written by somebody else 6 months ago on Google. And the people who wrote it, I believe they wrote it in Chinese. And so the review itself is translated into English. And sometimes there's nothing funnier than Google Translate. So here's the review. This is a very nice resort. The price is cheap too. Is this a clean area? It feels like living with animals. Birds cry at dawn in the morning. Lizards often appear inside the accommodation. The room is separate. The bathroom door doesn't close. When I wake up in the morning, on the toilet, a lot of black powder has fallen. What kind of animals do you live with? I think I understand. Recommended for those who want to do it like a jungle. Landscape is art. And we are back on Flippers Always Win. I am joined today by a very special guest, Ashwin, the boyfriend of last week's guest, Avery. Ashwin, thank you so much for joining today. You are a very recent addition to the Survivor fandom, but in a short amount of time, you have come a long way. So would love for you to take the listeners through your Survivor journey to this point.
Thanks, Flip. Really excited to be here. I've been listening to the episodes over the last past couple of weeks, and I was walking yesterday listening, and I was literally just laughing out loud on the sidewalk. So
that's heartwarming. Thank you so much.
My girlfriend Avery was on last week and talked a little about how you had come over and sort of incepted us into starting, I think it was Millennials versus Gen X on the night of July 4th. And then since then, we've watched Millennials versus Gen X, which I think was 33, David versus Goliath, which was 37, and then Edge of Extinction, which was, I think, my favorite of the three we watched fully so far. And it's been great getting back into Survivor. You know, I think I watched pretty casually at the beginning, like maybe the first couple seasons. I remember I must have been in college. My friends and I all went to the Outer Banks in North Carolina. And like the first day when we got there, one of our friends who organized the trip said, by the way, we're actually playing Survivor this entire week. He handed out the bandanas and he organized us in the tribes, and we had challenges every twice a day. We had tribal council that was recorded on like this big crow's nest at the top of the house. I was the first person to put it off the very first day. But there was a redemption challenge where you had to balance a ping pong ball on a paddle, and just whoever could do it as long as possible got back in the game. And that was me. So I had the thrill of getting back into the game, but I did not win.
Were you voted out immediately again, or did you at least last a few like a?
I lasted like another couple votes, and then it was just like, all right, see you later, Ashwin.
Well, I know you a little bit, and you're extremely social. So, do you feel as though you were voted out first because you were seen as too big of a social threat? Is that what you got from it?
I was what, 23 at the time? Probably. I'm going to say yes. I was too much of a social threat, friends with everyone. When you're friends with everyone, you're friends with no one.
That's a potential tagline for a dark season of Survivor.
It must have been way back when I had dropped off of the Survivor map for a really long time. But yeah, until you had brought it back in my life, and now we are glued to our seats.
And Avery mentioned this a little bit last week, and maybe you can corroborate. At first, you weren't necessarily completely on board right away. It took maybe a few episodes to do, as she called it, that guy thing where they're just like, I don't like it. Then all of a sudden you make a comment, I can't believe she said that. Were you just sort of like looking in the background, and then eventually you're just like, God damn it, I really like this show.
It's just sort of hard to dive back in when you're meeting so many new people. So I think it just took like the couple reps of, okay, let me learn about like the modern Survivor game. And then I was like, okay, I'm back in. This is great.
So that begs the question, what are you looking for when you watch Survivor? What is your favorite part of the game?
I really like the flippers always win. After every single tribal immunity challenge, everything, alliances build up and break back down, right? You always have to constantly reassess. So outwardly having that viewpoint of, okay, how do I position myself best in like the long term, but still having the agility to be like, okay, I see this opportunity. Let me step through that door and take that opportunity. So yeah, the long-term strategy view, but still the short-term agility of being able to flip if needed.
That's a good way to put it. Agility. There are some older seasons where somebody who just was in the lead of a big alliance ended up winning and they didn't really ever have to do anything. That's definitely not the case these days. And I think that probably if I had to identify one characteristic of why the game is better now than it was before, it is because of what you said, that after every tribal, things break down and you have to be built back up again. And I love that we're all in that mindset. I love that largely our generation wants to play that way and isn't afraid to play that way, because it takes a lot of guts to be able to just go reach across the aisle. Maybe some other people in our country could learn from that. Maybe they should be watching Survivor. I don't know, just a thought. So you've been watching for 3 months again now, and this is probably the most into it you've ever been. So, where do you see your Survivor fandom going?
I'm excited to start going back through some of the back catalog. I constantly want to be like, oh, let me like look up more about this person. But I am always stopping myself because so many of the players from those past seasons might show up on like a future season. Like when we were watching Millennials versus Gen X, who's a David Wright, I was like, wow, this guy's really, really interesting. Let me look up. And then Avery was like, no, we can't, because they're probably going to bring him back. And guess what? They did on one of the subsequent seasons we watched. I think it was Edge of Extinction. There's so much information and data out there around what already happened, which I think is actually nice, because when I go back and rewatch, I don't need to like research every little thing about it. I can just sort of watch the game. I'm prevented from doing that because there's so many potential spoilers out there.
You watch with Avery. How has it been watching with her? Is it something that you guys are bonding in your relationship over as like a new sort of fascination?
Avery and I both are strategic thinkers. It's really fun, like watching together and looking and analyzing and being like, why would they do this? And if they do this, what would happen here? And like playing out through all the possibilities has been really fun. And definitely it's a bonding experience, because, we can get pretty passionate about it and be like, wow, this is insane that this person would do X, Y, Z. But yeah, it's really fun being able to sort of apply that shared curiosity in the same context of Survivor.
Before July 4th, I had been telling people watch Survivor, suggesting that they watch Survivor. But I think you guys have created a monster, because you're my most successful project yet. Not that you've given me the confidence to do this with more people. So you're to blame for any future relationships that are altered in a good way, hopefully, by this show. OK, let's jump into it. What's the title of your job?
I guess a founder slash quote unquote CEO of an AI strategy company. But for the last several years, I've worked in strategic alliances in the data and AI space, which basically means, you know, you have companies that build technology, you have companies that then take that technology and implement it, like consulting companies, and those two organizations need to work together in order for, you know, really, really big companies to successfully actually adopt, right? There's a lot of work that goes on. Like, you don't just click a button and then build an AI platform. There's a lot of lots of different types of people, lots of different types of processes that need to be put together. So my job was helping bring these companies together and helping them, you know, understand, hey, we both have the same goal, which is to help this customer, this client, be able to make better decisions, to be, have better access to information. And how can we take the technology you've built, take the teams of AI change agents that we have, and get them to work together on this common goal, this common mission?
What is the most important aspect of being successful at what you used to do, creating strategic alliances? And do you feel like you see it translate out on the island in the show?
The elements of a strategic alliance that would indicate to me that it's going to be successful is, one, you're working towards a common goal. Two, you have that trust that you're able to build, and you do that by being vulnerable and being willing to compromise. And three, open like communication. So all those things sort of combine to build this environment where both sides of the alliance are comfortable, they feel safe, they're willing to work through the friction and issues that they have because they see the bigger common goal. And you do see a lot of players who think strategically like this. But I think one of the most important things in like this business world of having strategic alliances is being able to put your ego to the side and focus on that longer term shared vision and not rushing into anything too quickly. But obviously in a game like Survivor, like you're living day to day. So oftentimes you see people who might have a really good strategy and understand these are the things I need to do to make an alliance. But something happens, an event happens, it triggers some sort of reaction in them. They think, oh no, I am in jeopardy. I don't feel safe. And they take an action that's actually like not in their best interest, but because they're just sort of reacting in the moment versus taking a longer term view, they dig themselves a hole. Does that make sense?
It does. And for me, at least, and you tell me what you think, the biggest characteristic of a successful strategic alliance that I don't think translates out in Survivor, especially in these smaller tribes these days, compromise. I think it's really tough for people to compromise out there, at least on who they're voting for. There's lots of reasons why you want to own your game move. You're in literally a survival mentality as opposed to, you know, at work, of course you want to thrive and survive, but not every single decision has to be your final say for you to be successful. Whereas if you let one person control your game out there, you can feel as though you are in trouble unless you are intentionally trying to lay low. It reminds me of this past episode. It reminds me of what Genevieve did. She says she's a type A bossy lady, right? And she reacted with a survival instinct is the way that I interpret it. She did not compromise in her strategic alliance and she made her own path. Now, was there open communication? Yes, because Keyshawn told her that used her name as a decoy. But I think the best winners at least put on the guise of compromise. They trick people up until the end that they are willing to compromise and be flexible. What part of when you were working the strategic alliance part, what part of it was the part that you thrived in personally the most?
You know, strategic alliances is a really just a fancy way of saying, hey, let's help all these different people on all these different other teams who normally wouldn't be working together. Let's get them to be friends. Like, let's build an environment in which they feel comfortable working together. There's this phrase that we would always say, like, give to get, right? And that's putting people in the mindset that it's okay to provide a benefit or a service or an advantage to a person without there being a clear thing that you're getting back, right? Because that's how you build trust, right? The way you build trust, you say, I'm going to do this thing for you and I'm not expecting anything in return, right? I'm just doing this for you because I genuinely believe it's something that will help you. If it's something that helps you in the long term, I think it'll help me too, because we have a shared outcome. You don't necessarily need to know, like, step by step, what is it that, oh, if I do this for you, what are you going to do for me, right? Like, that doesn't really yield a strong, long-term, healthy alliance relationship. So finding ways to get all these different groups of people to not just find the common ground, but orient all of them towards it and help them see the advantage in everyone working together, that was the best part. Like, because in the business, corporate, strategic alliance world, it is just, hey, let's just all work together towards this common goal. The social game is the most important part.
So bringing it back to this current season, again, using that information, I can think of honestly three of the four episodes. We had two instances where somebody, or at least two people, tried to play that role. We had Kyle trying to bring Tiana and TK together. That did not work out. We had Kishan and Tini trying to bring Asia into their fold. That did not work out. Then we had Genevieve somehow able to bring Rome and Saul, of all people, together. That did work out. And of course, they're not all the same equal situations. The threat level was higher for Rome and Saul, right? They both potentially thought they were going home, whereas TK was blindsided, Asia was blindsided. Do you feel as though that's really the main difference why Genevieve was successful, because the threat level was more obvious? Or do you feel as though, from what you could tell, at least in the edit, that she did something that you just described that Tini and Kishan and Kyle were unable to do?
So it's timing. I think a lot of this is in terms of timing. When I would be looking to, you know, coordinate these relationships across all these different teams and organizations, you know, I would map out, like, where is there an opportune place to bring these people together and help them find common ground? But it's not like we would immediately just do all of that in the next week. You really want to bring people together in the moment. And like you said, the threat level, right? Which is where it's the most opportune moment, where it's immediately clear to these people that's beneficial for them to work together. And you can, like, lay the groundwork and say, hey, you know, you can plant the idea, hey, this would be an interesting thing. But if you try and force that too quick, too soon, you actually go the opposite way. You'll put a distaste in both people that, oh, well, actually, I don't really think I need to do that. I have bigger fish to fry right now. So it's not just about identifying where you can bring those people together, but identifying the moments, like Genevieve did, where, oh, this is a great chance for me to bring these people together, show them, hey, this is what the commonalities that we have. And also, this is the moment in which we can act. That's what I think, that timing piece is so crucial.
There is a survivor winner, a beloved survivor winner, who played one of the best games. And at their final tribal council, when asked, you know, why do you deserve to win the game? They listed all the reasons why they weren't as good as other players, all their deficiencies, but they laid claim to their best quality being knowing timing more than anybody else and excelling at timing. And so just when you say that, it immediately light bulb moment. I always think about that final tribal council, because I can't remember anybody else using that argument to their advantage at the end. It's not something that you think of as obvious. I mean, when I first asked you this question, what are the three elements? You didn't say timing, but when you think about it more and more, all those characteristics that you did initially describe, they lay the groundwork for what can work, but ultimately it has to be done at the right moment. Now, in terms of the new era, I feel as though there is less of an opportunity to lay groundwork because we have a shortened season, right?
Yep.
And also, in addition to that, people are really scared to talk before they know if they're going to tribal. And I think that is a shift. It's almost like if you say something, it's quicker to just bounce around everywhere. And before you know it, it could be flipped on to you. So I think it's a combination of the season is shorter, so there's less time to lay groundwork. And because the game is more fluid and the game is more, as you said, build it back up constantly, you don't have as rock solid of alliances anymore. And so you really have to wait in a lot of these moments, it seems, until after you lose and you've got a few hours before you go to tribal. And at that point, you are forcing people. And as you said, when Kishan tries to force Genevieve, people go the other way. And that's exactly what happened. So ultimately, human nature, you don't want to feel forced.
Yeah, I agree. I liked what you said about like taking action after you lose, you know, the challenge and you know you're going to tribal, because that is the moment in which people like can actually activate their leverage. And if you try and do so much of that ahead before the actual challenge itself, you're sort of like, why are you bringing this up to me right now? Like Sue kind of did that, I think it was last week, where she was like, I'm focused right now on winning this thing. I want to be in this positive mindset. And I want all of us to be thinking about only the outcome of us winning, right? And I would be the same way. I'd be like, let's focus on the task at hand and let's deal with that kind of thing when it's actually in front of us.
And that was an interesting one because Kyle was trying to get back in. So she, and I'm gonna toot my own horn here again, because I feel confident in it right now. From the very first episode, you were there. I made everybody, when we were leaving your house, say, who's your winner pick after episode one? I said Sue. And I feel like she's not necessarily a huge fan favorite yet. I don't know if she ever will be. I can understand why. But as somebody who picked her from the jump, I'm rooting for her. I think that answer she gave Kyle a couple episodes ago when Kyle was trying to get back in, she framed it in a way where it was a very reasonable response. Nobody's going to argue with, let's stay positive, especially when you don't even have to go to tribal imminently and they're just out on the island. It may not have been the answer that Kyle wanted to hear, but he can't argue with it too much, right? And so she sort of staves him off because she doesn't really want to work with him, but she keeps it politically kind at the very least, even if her tone, maybe her tone was probably the worst part of it. Maybe the heated moment was the worst part of it, but that's not really her fault. Kyle voted against her. She's doing a great job, I think, because you see her interacting with Kyle when they show it like pretty peacefully. And they seem to have like a fairly decent relationship outside of the game. But, you know, she's stewing and just waiting and like waiting for her chance. But she's keeping it cool and she's being peaceful.
Yeah.
Despite the paint debacle, she's got that final five idol. I see her going a long way because she's able to separate personal from game in the sense that she's playing it cool outwardly, but knows exactly what she wants to do inwardly.
Yeah, this sort of comes back to this idea that you have to be comfortable with the uncertainty of what's in front of you. Kyle was not comfortable with the uncertainty at that moment, and he chose to try and take action against that to make him feel more comfortable, feel more safe. But it was not the ideal timing to do it because other people aren't in any sort of mindset like that. So it really, it's the timing. And I agree with you. I kind of look at Sue playing it the right way. Other than the paint debacle from this week, I am really interested to see what happens next week with the paint. What do you think she could do to sort of bring the trust back to her that she has with her tribe mates?
Honestly, it seemed like Tiana was the one who was freaked out by it. But I noticed in the edit of Tiana's confessional afterwards, she was saying, oh, I'm suspicious of Sue. But she didn't say it in the sense, at least what we were shown again, of I think she has an idol. I'm not sure that Tiana necessarily even is suspicious of her in a game sense, which works to Sue's benefit. I don't see it being that big of a deal for her. Caroline's an ally of Sue. She probably like tried to talk down a little bit on the walk back. You know, Gabe's with Sue because of the position that Sue's in on the tribe, which partly is due to her, but partly is a little bit of good fortune on her part, right? Being brought in. I don't think it's going to affect her that much, at least in this pre-merge state. And by the time they get to the merge, you know, unless Tiana's like, Sue did this one thing, I think that she's actually going to be fine. She has the most powerful advantage in the game. And I think it's going to bode well for her. It was so funny watching it. I want to go back real quick. The Kyle thing, after he was blindsided by the TK vote, he tries to get back in. There's a way when you're on the bottom, there's a way when you maybe don't get what you want or you feel on the outside of the group to ease your way back in. It seemed like, even though he seems like a nice guy, he tried to do it pretty forcefully, to your point of he reacted right away. I wonder if that's a quality that prevents you from getting the win. When you are on the bottom, when something doesn't go your way, how you work your way back in, is that ultimately something that sticks with people? How did you politically navigate the tough times? Were you affable and did you do it through your social ability and your conversations and your timing? Or did you try to force your way back in? It feels like in the earlier days of Survivor, forcing your way back in was something that could be seen as a positive thing, could be seen as you had ability. Nowadays, it feels as though when you try to force your way into anything, that's a big no-no. do you see it as a big characteristic of somebody winning or losing in the end, if they do get to the end? And then in terms of real life, do you feel like that's something that gains or loses points for them in a strategic alliance setting professionally?
Yeah, I mean, everything is trust. And if you are trying to sort of force your way or push someone in a certain direction that they're not already headed, you're more likely to lose that trust than you are to build that trust even further with them. In the professional world, I would always try the easing yourself back in, right? The timing methodology of like, well, let me look for the next opportunity. Let me say, this one is not going to work. Let me look for the next one. And in Survivor, you don't have that opportunity always because, you know, you're living vote by vote, challenge by challenge. But I would still say, like, the more you can approach it from that give to get mentality of, I'm not trying to force my way back in. I'm trying to share something of value, whether that's information or, hey, there's an opportunity of something I think we can do, like proposing a potential solution versus saying, oh, I want to do this. So it's sort of the idea of, hey, let's float this information out there and see who reacts to it. And then I can decide on what action I should take, as opposed to saying, hey, this is the action I want to take. Let's do it. I think there's a lot of room in between, like, proposing an idea and then proposing we should take action on the idea. And I think if you propose the idea and sort of like let it marinate, then there's more opportunity for the action around that you want to actually happen. But you have to set it up and you gotta let it cook with some people before you just say, we're going to do this.
He also, thinking about the Kyle situation, did it in a group setting. And I feel as though what you're discussing might go better if you found your most trusted person and try to pitch it to them and then let that marinate. In his situation, he didn't really have a most trusted person because he's the only person left that voted the way he did. So I can understand why he would do that, but it still doesn't necessarily mean it's the best path forward for him. I think it's always better to pitch an idea to one person first, see if they react well at the very least, or even let them funnel the information because they have a little bit more trust, a little bit more influence built. So somebody who is able to funnel their information more tactfully, that's the person who has a better chance of getting somebody's vote at the end.
Yeah, but, absolutely agree.
So we were talking about winner picks, and you're telling me at the time that you saw a video of a guy who used AI machine learning to somewhat accurately, very accurately, in fact, predict winners of new Survivor seasons based off of the edits and the information of the previous seasons. And you have started your own company where AI is a giant part of what you are doing. So let's talk AI Survivor. Just take me through that video and take me through your thoughts on what role machine learning AI could be playing in Survivor moving forward that you'd like to see.
Yeah, so the video itself, I think what they were looking at was, okay, here are the patterns that we're finding based on how producers are editing every episode and providing this amount of screen time per each person and what that yielded for who was actually getting voted off or who was being successful.
What was the accuracy level, if you remember, generally?
It was probably, I think, 75, something like that. Wow. From an episode by episode perspective. Like, I think they were doing a pretty decent job of predicting who is the most likely chance of getting voted out based on what's going on in previous episodes.
And there's a thing out there that a lot of big Survivor nerds like myself, but a lot of Survivor experts, so to speak, use. It's called EDGIC. And it is essentially what they've been using for years to determine the likelihood of who a winner is based off their edits. And that's where that guy probably got his information from, because they keep stats and have been keeping stats for how many confessionals per episode each person.
Yeah.
There is this data community of Survivor that's been sort of doing this without the AI over the years, and fairly predictive, not completely accurate. Do you think that the producers are aware of the predictability of the edit? I feel as though even with knowing who the people are, I got like maybe like a 55%, 60% chance per episode of actually getting it right. Who goes home? I think the producers do a really good job of pulling the wool over your eyes and the big reveal at the end, especially in recent seasons when there is usually a couple of people's names being thrown out as opposed to one big target earlier back in the day. So do you feel as though the producers, one, will, or two, need to utilize AI to continue to throw people off the scent more and more.
By the time they're editing these shows, they already know the outcome. So they're pretty used to like planting the red herrings. There's certainly a way for them to use the data to make the decisions around the edits and things like that. They certainly could use AI to make it a little bit easier on themselves. And that's all that AI really is. You want to be able to look at a really large amount of data to make the best decision that you can. AI is just an acceleration of that. But it's still then upon the person to take action on it. I was reading an interview yesterday from Jeff about, you know, all the things behind the scenes that their production cast takes into account and all the little details that they put in. I'd be shocked that they're not doing some sort of data analysis and to help them plan out some of these things.
Yeah, it's a natural evolution if technology's there. A lot of people don't love the idea of AI. There are things that are negative about it, especially with the environment and taking away people's jobs. But if you're in a high power position where a lot of money is on the line and a lot of people are watching, you're going to want to use every tool, obviously, to help you do that. It's just funny to me. I'm sure his team is using it, but the image of Jeff Probst using AI, it's almost like the Spider-Man meme. It's like two robots pointing at each other.
It's really funny. Before we jumped on, I was just thinking through, like, not just within the context of the show, but like outside of the show, like what can fans do? What could people do? We're not that far away from like a normal non-technical person being able to build a digital replica of every single contestant, the information that they know about them before the series even airs, and like pull everything online, like their social media, anything, any news that's ever been put out about them, build a profile for every single person, you know, and you know the tribes that they're going into, use that in context with all the past information and the decisions people made, and simulate an entire season of Survivor, right? And be like, hey, what would happen when you, these five people come together, and if you know their sort of social profile, you have some behavioral analytics on them based on decisions they've made and publicly, of course, comparing those decisions to other profiles of past players, you know, you can build a pretty compelling simulation of a full Survivor season. I actually think it'd be pretty funny to do something similar. You could make a Survivor season with digital replicas of famous people or historical people, right? Just be like, what would happen if we threw all these people on island, right? And you randomize the challenges, you randomize the tribes. You can put in obviously a replica of Jeff too and say, hey, spit out the transcript of what happened at tribal council on like day 18. And it could do something like that.
That is absolutely fantastic. And all the nerds out there, myself included, are frothing at the mouth with the idea of it. I can only imagine. In terms of your collecting the news and information idea, that sounds like a job for Julia to just collect the news. That sounds like just pure internet stalking. I'm sure she'd enjoy that. Hand it over to you and you do the rest. Now I'm thinking like Abraham Lincoln is winning Survivor. Survivor 1800s. Survivor anytime. I think Abraham Lincoln would be a lead candidate to win. Talk about bringing people together, but also driving people apart. I don't know. Depending on how you look at it, the only thing I disagree with what you just said is that there is no replica of Jeff Probst. He is one in one and no AI. No replication happening there. But honestly, what you're talking about, this is how the NFL, for example, gets that point spread so close every time, because they are taking not just the stats, but the behaviors and all these little details that you don't even think of. They're running simulations 10,000 times through, you know, Amazon. And that is why you can't beat Vegas, because they have run the simulation to a point that any outcome that is different than what they put down is really just an outlier. And obviously outliers are not the norm. And so you are probably going to lose unless you get very lucky.
And obviously the NFL and professional sports has the money to do this. And because I guess I've been working in like the AI space for almost 10 years. And the real big thing has just been cost. Like a lot of the stuff has been possible. It was really, really, really expensive to do it. And the cost is like exponentially decreased over the last couple of years. So that's why I feel like, you know, we are only like a year, maybe 2 years away from you being able to click a button and generate like an episode of Survivor with random people and having AI automate a lot of that data collection, do a lot of that initial analysis that's necessary to build out those profiles, and then actually generate like the video of the episode. We're not far away. Someone is going to do this, and it's going to be pretty awesome.
And it might just be you at your company. We may have a new product for your startup. You're talking crazy, but you're talking crazy in a good way, and I think people would enjoy it. Crazy equals good in this situation. I recently, for fun, asked ChatGPT to create a beef between John Krasinski and Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Okay.
And just the level of detail, like you're saying, unbelievable that what they came up with was, it wasn't just funny, it was believable. It wasn't ludicrous. It was like, that's how it could go down for sure. So I'm ready for AI Survivor. Maybe they will just do a season where nobody's actually cast out there. That would be an interesting take. I'm sure the fandom would be beside themselves, but probably eventually be like, that was one of the better seasons. Should we be doing this more often? Well, we're coming to the end here, but you can't have a conversation about Survivor with Flip without talking about a winner pick. Now, normally I would just ask you to give your winner pick and also your can't win pick, but given the nature of the conversation, I'm going to adjust it a little bit. I hope you don't mind. Tell me who your winner pick is based off of what you think AI would say, and tell me your can't win pick based off of what you think AI would say. And for the purposes of this exercise, let's not do it just based off of confessionals. I know that's a huge part of it. Pretend you're the machine. Tell me what the machine thinks based off of your subjective opinion. Isn't it a fun exercise?
It is a fun exercise. I mean, to be fair, all AI is just a replica of people's cognitive abilities, right? We're just replicating the same thought processes that people have. It just turns out, people are much better at predicting things when they actually have access to the data. So we all are AI, and AI is us. That's the thing that's coming together. I would say the biggest thing that, if I was building like a prediction engine, I would be looking at the social networks that people are forming and how strong those networks are. So like really it's just who are you building trust with and who are you breaking trust with, right? How is that evolving episode by episode? I'll say two people I think who are doing a really good job of doing this and then are still positioning themselves for the future. Gabe, I think, is doing a pretty decent job of openly to everyone, being their friend, but behind the scenes, thinking really strategically about those networks. I don't love where he's talking like about Sue and Caroline is like,
No.
what did he say? Like, these are
Wounded birds, wounded
my
birds.
wounded birds, like insanity. That idea of like, he knows that he needs to balance these networks. Like that shows that he's coming at it with like the right approach. I love the move that Genevieve made this week too. She looked in the future and she saw, hey, there's this potential threat that's looming out there. I'd rather get it out of the way and use the network that I have right now. So Genevieve is another one I'd say is really strong. I really like Rachel is sort of like the middle of the pack. Like I think I've heard on the past episodes talking about folks who are sort of sitting in the middle, balancing those relationships. I think Rachel's another person doing a great job of it.
Let's say you input Gabe, Genevieve, and Rachel into the machine, which is just us.
Just us.
Tell me who the machine spits out of the three as the winner pick.
I'm picking Rachel.
Okay. And that's who Avery picked too. So maybe
Wow.
this is a pro Rachel household, is it
This
not?
is a pro, this is a pro Rachel household.
And then who's the machine saying has no chance? And once again, for the purposes of this exercise every week, and we're getting to the point that if Rome keeps us up, maybe I gotta stop including him, but we're gonna take Andy and Rome out of this equation. So who can't win besides Andy and Rome according to AI?
Yeah, I mean, Rome is obviously the person who's broken the most trust, I think. So really, really difficult for him to make his way out. I'd say Teenie is an example of a person who maybe didn't build the right networks of people from the get-go, and now she seems like she's in a really compromised position. And then I'd say Kyle is partially because of some of that timing and the him and Sue already butting heads, Sue having a stronger network in terms of Caroline and Gabe, it's going to be really, really difficult for him to make it to the merge just because of the way that he's positioned himself upon his existing tribe. I will say Kyle's also the person I'm probably rooting for the most because he is super genuine. I think he's really awesome in all the challenges. He's navigating camp life really, really good. He's a strong addition to the tribe. It's just that he picked some of the wrong networks from the beginning based on some of the wrong information, I think. He leaned the wrong way.
I think that they have to win out for him to make the merge, but I think they will because they're pretty athletic and they work well together in challenges pretty much. And the merge is not that far away either, especially in this new era. So if he can just get there, who knows? Maybe he exhibits the same behaviors that got him into the predicament in the first place, but at least he's got more of a shot there. So, but I agree with you. Teeny's not playing a great game right now. Maybe there's a redemption arc for them. Maybe this is the moment that they snap out of it and realize I got to come here to play and not just to let people walk all over me. But I agree with you. Last question, surprise question. Along the same lines of our AI discussion, you have a big beard. Who out
I
there?
I do have a big beard.
You do have a big beard. Who out there would benefit the most from a big beard right now for their game? And this can be, it doesn't have to be a man. This can be anybody.
Can be anyone.
Be anybody.
Andy would look pretty good with a solid beard. Everyone's sort of looking down upon Andy right now. Everyone's just sort of like, well, they sort of cast him off already. And actually, well, maybe Andy wants that. Maybe he likes being in that position. So maybe he wouldn't actually benefit from the beard because, you know, he wants to stay a little bit more in the shadows. Kyle's already got some interesting facial hair. You guys compared him to Shaggy.
Shaggy. I think we compared him to Shaggy, Ty Pennington, and Jimmy Carter. So a lot of
all those are accurate. So maybe not Kyle. Gabe, I could see doing really well.
Does he have a beard? I can't even remember, honestly.
I think he has like some scruff, but he doesn't have like a, you know, a really strong beard. And then I'll say Saul.
Mm.
Would love to see Saul with a beard.
Does Rome talk to him that way if he has a beard?
I don't think so. You've watched way more Survivor than I have. Has anyone ever been that blatantly disrespectful to another player and like go ahead leading up to a vote like that?
Certainly there have been fights and disagreements. This particular one feels different. I think just because Rome has no qualms at all about saying exactly what is on his mind. And that in the Survivor game, you certainly see it, but usually there's some level of tact. And he is either lacking in it or doesn't believe it to be important. And if you feel that people complement each other based off of what strengths do they have and what weaknesses do they have, the Genevieve Rome Alliance does make sense because she provides everything that he does not have. She has tact. Right. She is beauty. She is grace. And that's what kept Rome in the game. That's what kept Saul in the game. That interaction, that Rome-Saul dynamic, I feel really bad for Saul. I hope that he, now that he maybe has a little bit more agency in the game, decides for himself, I'm not taking it anymore. And I think we saw some of that in the last episode. Finally, he ultimately had to work with Rome for his own game. But I do hope moving forward, he looks out for himself with a little bit more strength and isn't playing scared.
I think Genevieve is going to have to work with Saul and Teeny, because if she takes Rome into the merge as like her main ally, what Rome has done to alienate people on his current tribe, he will do at the merge as well. I don't see the tact coming through, and I see that being a huge disadvantage for Genevieve. And I can't imagine Genevieve is not thinking that same thing. So yeah, my hope is that the Saul makes it out, partners with Genevieve, gets to the merge, and then, you know, everyone gets another shot at life.
Yeah, that's really the main reason that I don't fully agree with you and Julia on this move that she made being a great one. I don't think it's a bad one, but I don't think it's a great one. I think it's a net neutral for her because, sure, she kept her closest ally, but her closest ally is a ticking time bomb. And when you go into the merge, being associated with that person may not be the best thing. Whereas, yeah, maybe she doesn't have as much agency if she keeps Kishan around like right now. But I think that he was going to be loyal to her. Maybe I'm wrong about that. He did throw her name out as a decoy, which is never a great sign. But they're probably one or two episodes away from getting the merge. And at that point, things change. Who knows? We'll see what happens. We will never know unless we ask AI, and AI will tell us, and we will take it as fact. Ashwin, thank you very much for coming on. This was a fascinating, in my opinion, conversation. I hope to have you back on as long as you want to be back on sometime in the future. and we can see if some of these predictions come to fruition. Thank you for bringing a unique perspective, and I'm happy for you that you are into the fandom now, and I'm excited to see where that goes for you.
Thanks so much for having me on. And yes, I would love to be back and look at these predictions that we've made with our AI brains and see how they turn out.
Yeah, if Andy grows a beard, then we'll know that it's for real.
There we go.
Well, that is a wrap on episode 4 of Flippers Always Win. Thank you so much for tuning in. You may have noticed that Julia not have a segment on this week's podcast, and that is because she was fired. No, I'm just kidding. She was not. She was a little busy, a little sick this week, but she will be back next week with that deep dive that we all have come to love and cherish. Thank you to Ashwin for coming on and sharing his thoughts as a new member of the Survivor fandom. We will be back next week, episode 5, coming at you. This is Flip signing off, and I would say a tagline if I had one.